these criminals are coming up with scams left and right, and the impact that it has on the victims, not only financially, but health-wise, litigation-wise, collection agencies coming after it. It is scary, folks. So listen.
Introducing The Protectors, inside criminal minds from around the world. Presented by the IAFCI, leaders in safeguarding consumers from fraud and scams for more than 50 years. And now your hosts, International President Mark Solomon and Chairman of the Board Michael Carroll.
Hello, everybody. This is Mike Carroll, International Chairman of the International Association of Financial Crimes Investigators. I am with Mark Solomon, our International President. Mark, how you doing today? What's up?
Mike, I'm not doing too well.
What's going on?
I checked my mailbox the other day, and I got some bills in the mail.
So? Well, at least you used the mail.
Bills are in my name. Says I went to the hospital, had surgery, and as far as I know, I don't remember going to the hospital or getting surgery, Mike.
You know, this sounds like when we were at the conference in Oklahoma City, that was brought up by somebody, right?
Yeah.
Talking about that, like an identity theft case.
And this is something, you know, what I love about the IFCI is, you know, you could get together, you got all these subject matter experts
right.
in the room, and you think you know everything, and then all of a sudden you meet somebody else and like, holy cow. You're like, you know, I knew about it, I didn't know much about it, or I didn't know anything about it. But it's just these criminals are coming up with scams left and right, and the impact that it has on the victims, not only financially, but health-wise, litigation-wise, you know, collection agencies coming after it. It is scary, folks. So listen, check your mail because, you know, you might get an email. You might get something in your mailbox saying you owe some big bill. There's a problem. And you know what? We have a subject matter expert here today coming onto the podcast to tell you a horrific story. And this could happen to you, so pay attention.
Hey, Mark, before you do an introduction, I remember at the conference, one of our attendees that listens to the podcast said that I had a smooth voice.
Oh, God.
So I think it was soothing.
Yeah. Oh, soothing. That's right. It was soothing, not smooth. Soothing. So I don't know if she liked my voice or did it put her to sleep.
I thought she said oozing. I don't know.
It could have been that.
But whatever. All right. Well, listen, Mike, I'm going to kick things off right here and get right into the thick of things because this is a story that is going to shock you and also make you worry. Are you the next victim? So this subject matter expert was at our conference this year, very recently, over in Oklahoma City. And we got to sit down and talk to him, and he shared the story with us, and we're like, oh, this is podcast bound. This is going to scare the hell out of people. So I'd like to introduce, without any further interruption, Detective Mark DeBona. He is with the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office in Arizona, and he is one of our healthcare fraud experts. So welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you very much for having me.
And I like that name, Mark. That's such a great, you know, like, I don't know.
It's got a ring to it.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, yeah. We find our named Mark are highly intelligent, good looking, you know, so.
I appreciate that too.
All right. Yeah. Well, I'm the exception, but you look all right. So, but whatever. So Mark, you got involved in an investigation. Actually, before we start that, how did you get involved in law enforcement? How many years do you have with the Maricopa County Sheriff's Department? And then how did you get into healthcare fraud?
So starting actually in September, so next month, I will be 19 years.
19.
That I've been with the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office. And I've been with them my whole career as far as law enforcement is concerned. And so I got into it just based on just helping people. It was just something I always wanted to do. I was always interested in. After going to college, looking for a job, they were hiring. And it was kind of one of those that I said, hey, why not? And fell in love with it. And
awesome.
Been there for 19 years now.
Awesome. Well, we thank you for your service. Good that we have such a protector warrior out there in Maricopa County. So,
hey, Mark, you belong to the financial crimes team, right?
Correct.
How many members of that team?
There's only three detectives assigned to our financial crimes.
Cover the whole county?
Yes.
Wow.
We're hoping to change that.
yeah, there's a need, I'll tell you right now. But it's such a skill set. It's not something you learn really in the police academy that much. You know, it's from actually going out there, working the cases, getting your hands in the mud. So tell us about this case. And, I know it started in 2024. How did it come to your attention?
It was actually brought to my attention when I came over to the unit in 2024. The media had reached out asking about the case.
Okay.
The victim had gone to the media because she had filed multiple reports with multiple agencies based on what was happening. And what they ended up doing was she went to the media because she was receiving all of these bills. And really, what do you do with that? She didn't know. Nobody could really advise her on what to do, that her identity was stolen and somebody's using her identity and she's got hundreds of thousands of dollars in bills. So she went to the media to say, hey, I don't know what to do. You know, I filed police reports. I've done this. I've done this. So the media reached out and said, hey, what's going on with her case? So I was the newer detective at the time to the unit. So they said, hey, can you look into this? And as I started looking into it, it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. Wow. And I've was able to put it back to 2022 is when it started.
Wow.
And by putting things together and figuring things out, talking to different agencies and everything like that. And I think that's one of the most important things of why this ended up being okay. And this, you know, we ended up solving this based on our communication and our relationship with other agencies.
Awesome.
And that was key to literally everything. Having people to go to say, hey, you guys have had contact with this person, and then pulling a body-worn camera and showing that's not my victim, but that's her name and her date of birth, right, and her social security number that's being used.
Wow.
And showing that 4, 5, 6 different times with 4 different agencies, okay, through the span of 2 years.
So where did you start once you got this? You know, it was out in the media, you're assigned to the case. Where did you go from there? What did you
initially first do? I went and spoke with the victim, and she had said, hey, I've filed multiple reports. Every time she'd get a bill, she'd call the company that was sending it to her, and she'd say, this isn't me. I was not there. I didn't get this service. And unfortunately, when it comes to bills, they don't really listen very well.
Right.
So, you know, at most, she was told, hey, go file a police report. So she would call the report. The issue is, you know, Maricopa County, 4th largest county in the nation. We've got many, many cities in our county, one of them being City of Phoenix, 4th largest city in the nation. So she lived in Phoenix. She would call Phoenix and try to make a report. Well, the hospital that this suspect was seen at wasn't in Phoenix. It was in Mesa. So Phoenix said, hey, you got to go talk to Mesa. And it, back and forth. So she's talking to different agencies because this woman was going around all throughout the county into different cities, right, and going to hospitals
making
at different cities.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the hard part, was all of that.
Yeah, Mark, we work financial crimes. When we think of identity theft, we think like account takeovers, opening up bank accounts. But there's other parts of identity theft. Healthcare fraud.
Absolutely.
Getting a phone, mortgage, but there's a lot of others. Was there any type of financial fraud against her other than more on the healthcare side? Was there other type of fraud?
No, it was purely bills in this case. We're talking close to $500,000 over a span of 2.5 years.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
No worries.
But that the suspect actually got medical attention?
Correct. One of those being specifically, she was the suspect was hit by a car while riding a bike. And so fire department picks her up, takes her to the nearest trauma center. She has a $250,000 trauma center bill based on the surgery to her leg. They put in pins and a bar in her leg and did everything like that. So that's a very expensive bill,
sure,
and especially when there's no insurance attached to it. So that's a bill that they will very quickly try to.
And was that her first fraud that she committed against this victim, or she had already committed fraud?
No, she had already committed.
Got it.
She had already committed some. So that was the part that was, I think, probably around the third, maybe fourth one when that actually occurred.
So for our audience, basically what happened is somebody obtained the personal identifying information of somebody else. They impersonated that person to seek medical treatment. And I'm assuming these locations, the doctors or hospitals believed it was her, the true person, the identity theft victim, and they wound up sending bills to the victim's true address and demanding payment.
Correct. Okay. That's the one thing, the question I get most about this case is, they didn't ask her for ID.
Right.
When she comes into the emergency room, nobody verified information.
Right.
And the problem is, and this is the truth, pretty much everywhere, is especially in a trauma situation, they're not checking to see if you have ID,
right,
when your life is in danger or something major,
right, sure,
is occurring. And you can't ask them to do that either. It would not be that's not the time or the place. So they immediately will start fixing you to make sure they can save your life. And, you know, so nothing against the hospitals at that point. It's purely just that's the fact of the situation.
You know, I know everybody's personal information is out there, but did your victim ever kind of determine where somebody might have got a hold of her personal information?
This specific case, it was her ex-husband's now ex-girlfriend.
Oh.
So that was not anything as far as her fault was concerned. My victim did not leak her information, did very well to try to take care of it. Unfortunately, her ex-husband had paperwork with her information on it, and while they were dating, that's how she got a hold of it.
Did you prove or disprove whether or not the ex-husband was knowingly involved?
Ex-husband was not knowingly involved. We were able to prove that. We did interview him. We were able to tell that for sure.
Okay. All right. So my understanding during the course of this suspect had multiple interactions with law enforcement.
Correct.
But she took on the identity of the victim. Is that correct?
Correct.
So can you explain a little bit more about that?
Our law enforcement listeners will understand that completely, and it's something we deal with in patrol all the time. It's that when you go to make an arrest, you go to question a suspect in whatever situation you're dealing with, and they have a medical situation, that becomes the priority. Or life safety is our number one priority of the public. But so what she would do is she would... This specific suspect had two fugitive of justice warrants out of the state of Washington. So she knew if they got her real name, she was going to she was going to jail and she was going to get extradited. So what she would do is she gave the victim's name, because the victim has a clean record, was never been in trouble. And in doing so, she would give the information, and then she would feign an illness. She was living on the street a lot. She was a drug addict. So by feigning that illness initially, then, of course, fire department gets called, because that's what we as police officers do and law enforcement do. Call the fire department. They come to take care of her, and they take her to the hospital. And you can, and she avoided an arrest each time that occurred based on whatever the situation may have been.
Wow.
Stayed in the hospital for a couple days.
Right in the grasp, but she was able to kind of squeak her way out of, getting arrested.
Right.
Or finding out her true identity. Right?
Exactly.
Right.
Hey, Mark, what was the estimated amount of fraud?
The total loss was closer to $500,000.
Wow.
In the actual case, there were two hospitals that refused or never really responded to the county attorney with wanting to aid in prosecution. So the actual case was more along, I think in the end, was $311,000 was what it was. But there was probably still about $100,000 to $150,000 of bills that were out there. But they ended up just writing off, or the hospitals made different decisions.
So you put the case together. You were the case agent. Did this go federal or did it go state?
State.
Okay.
Yeah, we kept everything local. In Arizona, we've got very good laws for that reason, and it would have been much better to keep it that way. She was going to do more time through state charges than anything we would have tried to do federally.
Okay. But can you give us an approximate time frame when she got arrested, and then was she convicted? Did it go to trial, or how did that get the conclusion?
She got convicted. Let's see. I was able to identify her. And again, that was through what I ended up doing is I went out and I reached out to those four or five different law enforcement agencies and got body worn camera from them of all of her interactions with these police departments.
That's good.
Used that to then identify tattoos and things on her. We only knew her by her street name, which was Red. So we didn't know anything else about her. So what I ended up doing was putting together a BOLO, or be on the lookout for, and I put out a phone number initially to, hey, to the public. We hit the media with it and said, if you've seen her, call us. We got tips, a bunch of different tips. One specific tip that came through was very specific, and I knew it was a good tip. The information that they had on her was spot on.
Right.
That's not something we had released at the time. She had a leg injury from that surgery, and so somebody had called in and said, hey, she's in a wheelchair. I have seen her in this area.
Right.
She's got a cast on her left leg, and we knew that's who it was.
So she had no leg to stand on when she went to court.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry.
Oh, my God.
I had to throw that out there, but
that's a good one, Mark. That's a good one. So, to pick it up a little.
So at that point, I hit, that was in the city of Phoenix. So I provided my contacts at the city of Phoenix with the BOLO specifics of the tattoos, showing close-ups of all that information, and told them, hey, if you find her and when you question her, she's going to give you this information.
Right.
That is false. That is not who she is.
Yeah.
Call me immediately when you do.
Yeah.
And luckily, less than a week later, two very, very good officers with the City of Phoenix Police Department happened to be driving by a bus stop and said, oh, let's turn around. I I recognized that maybe somebody, they turned around, questioned her, and she gave the false name. She gave the fake information. They said, oh, that's what we were told you were going to say, and we know that's not you. They called me. I was able to go out and identify her and take her into custody.
Wow. That's great.
So she was convicted.
So I ended up charging her with 89 felony counts. Wow.
That could be a record.
And at that point, they ended up, county attorney reviewed everything, gave her a plea agreement for, I believe, 12 different felony counts is what she ended up pleading to, aggravated identity theft, quite a few others, based on her history and everything like that. And she took a plea deal for 8 to 10 years.
Wow. And Mark, I want to go back to the victim for a second. And, you know, this is a drawn out long case. And this victim was repeatedly getting more things in the mail, more bills, more debt. This had to have absolutely wrecked her credit.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all those bills, she did her due diligence. She would call each company and say, this isn't me. She would provide them with the police report numbers, everything that she could do to try to fight it off. In this situation, she actually worked for one of the hospitals. And because of that, once that group of hospitals, I'm not going to get into specific names, but where she worked actually was two of the hospitals that this person had actually gone to. So unfortunately, her hospital believed it to be her and started garnishing her wages based on the bills that they were they were pursuing. And luckily, her immediate supervisor was able to show, hey, while this person, the suspect, was in getting help at a different hospital, the victim, who is your employee, was actually at a different hospital with a patient at the time.
Right.
So at that point, they were able to help with that situation at least. But again, for what you're already going through is heartache, you know, with all of the bills that she got. And like I said, when we're talking $300,000 worth of bills, she had four different collection agencies coming after her. It's heartbreaking to realize the stress and what she was going through just because of somebody like this using her information.
Yeah. And listen, you know, we talk about, and people always think when it comes to financial crimes, the money is lost. And in this case, the money was mostly lost by the medical businesses, the hospitals, the doctors, stuff like that.
And the insurance company.
And the insurance company, as well. But, you know, that victim went through hell for, you know, a number of years.
And like, unfortunately, she still is. And that's a part, that's a huge thing that she has to
do.
That
was the next question.
You know, she's fighting that with her credit. So now at least she's got that court paperwork to show this person was found guilty, you know, and is responsible. And now she just has to, you know, but if you ask anybody, I don't care who you talk to, the IRS, an accountant, the people that are experts in this, how do you fight that? Nobody really has an answer. Nobody really knows. What do you do to show this wasn't me? And how quickly does that get turned around? And, and I'll be honest with you, I don't even have an answer to that. She's still doing it. And this happened, you know, she was found guilty at the beginning of the year, but it's been, she was in custody for a year while this was going through. So in that amount of time, she's, you know, this victim is still fighting to show and save her name and her credit.
You know, Mark, the Federal Trade Commission has a great website. I don't know if she used the sources there, but they give you what you need to do to clear up your credit. You know, like you said, you got to get a hold of the collection agencies. You got to get a hold of the three major credit bureaus. You got to get a police report. And they're really good trying to give you the instructions you need if you're a victim of identity theft. I'm sure she's using that source.
Yes, we provided that to her, but finding that initially was rough. I mean, that was the part where, you know, no matter who you talk to, because the credit companies don't tell you, oh, yeah, go here, and this is what you need to do. They just go, oh, nope, sorry. That's, you know, and so that's the hardest part is who's truly out there to help you. The Federal Trade Commission is really one of the only groups that's out there that can truly be able to lead you in the right direction in this situation.
And this is, you know, for our audience, listen, this is the importance. I want you to understand something. A couple years ago, there was a statistic out about network intrusions just in the United States. So it's not a question, is my information protected? We have to start with the belief that our information is in the hands of criminals. That's why you need to monitor your accounts. Open your mailings, okay? Don't think it's just an advertisement or something. Open it, read it. And again, if you find something that's open, a bill in your name, you need to take action quick. One, file a report with the three major credit bureaus, okay? Let them know you're a victim of identity theft. If your Social Security number was compromised, contact the Social Security Administration. If file a police report, okay? You know, if somebody has your information, they have it for a lifetime, and they can use it over and over and over again. So like I said, you have to be very proactive, get it reported. You know, in this case, she had a great detective that really stood alongside of her to solve this case and help her recover. And it's not a simple process, but follow those steps. Like Mike said, FTC, great information out there. We have a bunch of information on our IFCI website on the public page. So go there, but don't ignore it, you know, because it's only going to get worse. If you ignore it, it's going to pile up.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's unfortunate. That, you know, anytime this is a situation is unfortunate, but the piling up is the scariest part.
Yeah.
Because you never know. And like I said, for a hospital bill, most people think, I go in, I see a doctor in the emergency room, and we were talking about this before the podcast started, but it was more along the lines of, yeah, you see a doctor, but that doctor works for a doctor's group. So you get a bill from the hospital, you get a bill from the doctor. Oh, you got your blood draw. That's going to a lab. You're going to get that bill. So it's not just one time, unfortunately. One time leads to 15 different things. And then that, again, piles up. And that's the scariest part. So the quicker you can get on it and report it and watch out for yourself, the better off you are.
Yeah. And just go back to what you were saying, Mark, you know, monitor your credit. You know, I think you go to annualcreditreport.com and get a free credit report.
Yeah, and all the major credit bureaus offer it.
That's what I'm saying.
So you could get one, you know, 3-4 times a year for free. So check that. If there's anything that's not associated with you, a different address, a different phone number, report it. Get that taken off your credit report. And then also be watchful and see if anybody else has requested a credit report. We've seen that where the criminals have enough PII information to reach out to a credit bureau or a third party that may offer a credit report, and they're able to impersonate you, get that, and find out where your accounts are. The one big thing I would tell you is a credit freeze.
Absolutely.
I saw Mark already, like, he was ready to jump at the bit right there, is credit freeze. If you get your date of birth, Social Security number, your address, phone number, credit freeze. Nobody could open up anything new accounts, but you're still vulnerable at your existing accounts.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, Mark, I have to ask you, how does it make an investigator feel? This was a long journey, not only for the victim. This suspect was out here running around every day committing fraud. She was drug addicted, you know, and got all this free services. How did it feel, you know, for you knowing that this poor woman was at wit's end, went to the press to help, and you were the person to actually solve it and charge somebody?
Well, I'll tell you, finding someone like this and putting them away is kind of why we do it. But I'll be honest with you, the thank you I got from the victim was worth it all, in my opinion. And that's something that I'll never forget. She was so grateful because this was her nightmare coming to an end.
Yeah.
Like I said, unfortunately, she's still dealing with it. But at the same time, it's finally over
for her,
and she can start that process of fixing things. And that alone, giving her that weight off her shoulders was huge. And that was that was bigger for me. You know, that thank you meant a lot because, you know, you did something.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a victimless crime. This one had a victim very specifically. The multi-million dollar companies that lost, you know, the insurance company that lost money. Nobody really, you don't think about that. Yeah, they're a victim. They lost money, but they've got so much. It's okay. This poor woman that's working her butt off to try to you know, stay afloat and do good things, you know, becoming a victim.
Right.
That was the justice that I was looking for, and catching someone and putting them away was very well worth it. And that's why we do what we do.
Yeah. You know, in this type of case, Mark, you mentioned it, that put a credit freeze, but this is where a little different on healthcare fraud. I never thought of that. When a suspect goes in the hospital requesting medical assistance right away, they don't do a credit check.
Right.
It's not like you're applying for a credit card where they'll go to run your credit bureau, see what kind of credit you got. So maybe the hospitals need to do that. Well, I don't know if I could see a hospital somebody comes in seriously hurt, doing a credit check on that person before they operate. Yeah. I don't know if that's going to happen, but
no, they're going to treat the patient eventually send a bill out.
No, I mean, I'll tell you, in this case, out of the five hospitals that were used, one of them, which is a major hospital system in Maricopa County, took this case specifically and made some very specific changes on how they were going to deal with this.
Oh, good.
And it actually brought a lot of positive feedback to them, and they are actually making changes to do something about it. So that was a $250,000 bill they were willing to write off, or would have had to write off, because they didn't have anything until we came to them and said, hey, I've got a suspect. And then they went, oh, wait a minute. And so now they're taking that information to figure out a better way of identifying people and dealing with them, and making sure that they have the right person. Because the other thing that nobody really thinks about in the identity theft in this specific case was each time that this suspect went in to have this treatment, you know, done, whatever it was, the diagnoses, the blood type, the things she had in her system are now connected to the medical record of my victim.
Yeah.
So we had to contact each hospital and tell them that is not the right person. Because if she goes in and they have a blood type, and the victim, God forbid, had a trauma, and they give her the wrong blood type based off of this woman being treated, they could have killed her.
They could have killed her.
And so now she's gone as far as having to get a medical alert bracelet to show what her information is. So God forbid those records were not fixed properly. It was much, much bigger than just the money.
Sure.
And so that was the hardest part too. But again, luckily we got on top of that. You know, we helped her contact the right people at all those places. And again, she's going to be okay and is dealing with it.
Yeah.
Hey, Mark, you're an IFCA member. How did this, this investigation, did the IFCA help you?
It did. It did. It really helped a lot with the idea of who to go to in these other agencies. The other contacts, knowing I could go to different agencies, knowing their financial crimes units that would have gotten these identity theft cases, is really what led me to then have the contacts that I needed to get the information, get the body-worn camera videos, get that kind of stuff, was having those contacts that I have through the memberships, our fellow memberships through all the agencies throughout Maricopa County. That was a huge part of this, and making those relationships to be able to call and say, here, this is what I've got. Do you guys have anything that matches it? And they were able to go, oh, yeah, that comes up over here. Look, we have this case. We have this. And that made a huge difference, again, finding and identifying our suspect.
Yeah. So, Mark, kudos to you and the suspect in this case. Shannon Smith got 10 years in prison, correct?
Yes.
That was the sentence? And I'll tell you what, I don't know if she ever went to a cardiologist on the other person's medical information, but you know what? She doesn't have a heart. I'll tell you that right now. She's heartless. So, there, I'm sorry.
Hey, Mark, I'll tell you, I went to the doctor last week. I got a bill from that, and I told him, every time I wake up, I look in the mirror, I want to throw up. What's wrong with me? He goes, I don't know, but your eyesight's perfect.
Oh, God. I'm sorry.
Better than yours.
Well, that pretty much puts an end to the episode there, folks. Right. But no, Mike and I joke around a lot, and we're not making light of these crimes.
Exactly.
It's very serious, very impactful. But I could tell you from law enforcement, like I said, you deal with stuff like this every day. It could make you very jaded and negative. And kind of our way of coping with this stuff is lighthearted humor. So, but I do believe this suspect is a heartless person and really destroyed this woman's life for a period of time. So we are glad the victim is on her way to recovery. We're glad that she
got you
assigned to that case.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Hopefully, Shannon, when you get out of prison, you'll actually be a law-abiding citizen. So we wish you well.
Extradite her back to Washington.
There you go.
We don't have an issue. Just don't come back to Arizona.
Exactly. So
great job, Mark.
Thank you.
All right, folks. Well, listen, another awesome episode and just another completely different fraud we haven't touched a lot on.
Right.
We're going to focus on it some more. We have a couple other subject matter experts about fictitious medical facilities and ordering equipment and all sorts of frauds. We learned a lot of it at the conference. So, folks, if you're interested, Mike, where can they subscribe to our podcast?
I like to go to Spotify or Apple or wherever you listen. Wherever you listen to podcasts, we want you on board. We want you. We got another protector.
Yeah,
Mark.
Yep, another man in the army on the front lines,
and we appreciate it.
In the trenches. He's working the mud every day to fight for victims. And Mike, listen, we always want to hear from our listeners, so shoot us an email if you're a subject matter expert, you have a story to tell, a crime that you were impacted by, or financial or cyber. Reach out to us, and the address is protectorspodcast@iafci.org. All right. Well, you know what, Mike? I think it's that time again. Folks, spread the word. Tell everybody about the Protectors Podcast. You can be one of those protectors right now by sharing this episode with somebody else.
And so we need you.
We need you. All right, folks. Well, I'm Mark Solomon, International President of the IFCI. I'm signing off the incredible state of Connecticut.
I'm Mike Carroll, International Chairman. I'm signing off from Chicago.
Detective Mark DeBona, thank you very much for having me. I'm signing off from Arizona.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. Remember, as you join the fight to protect our citizens, you're not alone. With more than 6,500 members from around the world, the men and women of the IAFCI are standing together with you. To learn more or to join the IAFCI, please visit our website at www.iafci.org. The Protectors Podcast is produced by Modified Media and is available for free wherever you listen to podcasts. The hosts and guests' opinions are their own and do not reflect those of management, employers, or sponsors. Listeners are encouraged to contact law enforcement if they suspect being a victim of a crime.